and welcome to All His Movies, the Shia LaBeouf podcast. This is episode 11, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull from 2008. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And this is one that we've been looking forward to in different ways, I think, all along. Like, we knew that the big ones to watch in the middle of his career were the three Transformers movies and this one. I think I had only seen this in theaters. I don't think I'd seen it since theaters. I don't remember much about it. I know that you, I think, had said that you liked it or you had recollections of liking it. This is a movie that's basically panned by most people, in spite of the fact that it has a 77% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, like, you know, even if they're not giving it great reviews, like, three quarters of critics think it's a good movie. My hot take is that I don't think it's a great movie, but I think it's fun. If it's a little bit forgettable, it doesn't really harm the Indiana Jones brand. I think it's a cash grab, but I think a lot of things are cash grab, and I really don't have a problem with this. But you, I understand, have changed your mind a little bit.
I have changed my mind a little bit, but you actually, I think you got it in reverse. I haven't seen this in its entirety since theaters. I almost walked out. I was pissed. Believe it or not. And I don't usually get like that. I don't know. Indiana Jones has just always been a part of my life. And I remember when Last Crusade came out, and that was terrific. Something inside just, like, wasn't accepting it inside of me. I just couldn't process what was going on. But
okay.
Over the years, I actually think this movie ages pretty well.
Yeah.
And, you know, compared to something like Transformers, it's freaking, you know, it's Chinatown. I kind of have the same take as you do. You know, it definitely does nothing to seriously damage the franchise or anything. Like, there's really maybe one or two things in here nowadays that I just kind of scoff at. But for the most part, I've come to terms with the tone of what Indiana Jones should be, and I kind of feel like this fits right in the middle of there, you know? I don't want to call it the worst, but, like, it's the least best of all of them, but
right.
I definitely don't, like, throw my arms up in the air and change the channel when it comes on anymore. You know, I see the value in it.
I'm not saying that you should compare this to Raiders or anything. So also, here's another little disclaimer, going back a few months to Tobin's, like, bombshells about My Own Private Idaho and stuff. I'm not 100% sure I've seen Temple of Doom and Last Crusade all the way through. I know I've seen big parts of both, and I'm sure I've seen both, but I'm not 100% sure. Raiders I've seen probably 30 times. Like, I know Raiders inside and out. Like, that's the one I know. The other two I'm not sure. So, like, I'm not this guy who grew up on all three of these movies. I think the only one that my dad ever really, like, I saw him ever watching, which is why I watched it, was Raiders. I think he loves Raiders. I don't have this, like, passion, like, people, like, with Star Wars or whatever, like, or Ghostbusters, the new, like, people, like, this ruined my childhood, this new movie. Like, I don't have that with this. I don't really have any of those kind of movies from my childhood. So I'm not, maybe I'm the wrong person to sort of get offended. I watch this movie through the lens of, aside from just looking for Shia, but through the lens of, why do people hate this? And I really don't have any reason why people hate it. The only thing I can sort of come up with is because people might hate that there are aliens, but my counterpoint to that is, like, okay, but you're okay with a world where, like, God exists and, like, the you know, Ark of the Covenant is a real thing, but no, we can't do aliens? I don't, if that's the argument, I don't know if it is or not, if that's the argument, I don't buy it.
Yeah, I hear you too. I mean, it wasn't necessarily the plot or the aliens for me at the time. I think it was more just, I don't know what it was. Maybe we were away from Indiana Jones for too long, and when it came back, it just felt different or whatever, but, like, maybe there is a bit of sort of extra childishness in this one a little bit, but that's part of the franchise. If you go back and look, there's always been this balance between, you know, scary seriousness and then goofy lightheartedness and stuff. And, you know, I think maybe the balance is tipped a little more towards the youth audience this time around, but that's okay because, you know, it's kind of like this soft reboot. It goes through the motions of all the previous movies while trying to be itself. Yeah, like, as a kid growing up, I mean, we had the VHS tape of Temple of Doom, so, like, that was on constant play around my house all the time. Raiders I was least familiar with growing up, but, like I said, the Last Crusade came out in theaters when, and I got to see that and really came to know that. That kind of became my favorite one for a while there.
Okay.
But, yeah, you know, I think there's only maybe, like, a couple little moments that, you know, throw this movie off for me. And they're seriously moments, like, if they were cut out of the film, I would have, like, no issue with this whatsoever. But it's mostly just the use of special effects, I think, in this movie are a little bit of a problem. I just think they stand out and they take you a little bit out of the time period it's supposed to take place in. But you're right. I think, you know, on a grand scale, there's nothing here insulting to the franchise. There's even that Indiana Jones television show that came out in the 90s, and you can watch it on Amazon now. And I've been catching up with that with one of my nephews. And clearly no one has watched that or there'd be outrage too. I mean, Indiana Jones was taught to shoot by Teddy Roosevelt. You know, like, he has been woven through the fabric of this alternate history his entire life, and this is really no different to what they're trying to do with the character forever. You know, I just think it's more overt now in this one, and it's clearly overpacked with stuff too, and so I think it's just an attack on your senses to a degree.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, you're right, the CGI doesn't really age well, and I think that's the biggest thing, because I mean, 8 years is not a long time, but 8 years in terms of computers is a really long time. The Transformers movies are all about CG. Putting aside for a second the fact that they're, like, all CG and we don't, like, it's not great, that ages better, right? Like, that, I mean, even though if you can't understand what's going on, like, that still looks good. Like, that looks better than this movie, right, in terms of CG?
Yeah, I think so, because, well, with that, it's wall-to-wall. Like, those, you need CG, and it's right there from the start. And here, it's just kind of thrown in at certain moments, you know? I can tell they're trying to do most things with practical effects, but then there's times where they cross the line and it doesn't seem necessary. A pretty overt moment of CGI-ness is the jungle chase fight, and then
yeah,
with all the monkeys that become sort of incorporated into that sequence, you could cut out all that monkey business and
Hey-o.
do the jungle chase a little more practically. I think they kind of overshoot a little bit with this one. I just wanted it to be a lot less than what we got. I think if they had just pulled back at a lot of moments, it would be a lot better.
I read one thing online that apparently the original idea was to do most things practically, and then when they started shooting, Spielberg was like, oh, we're going to use a lot more CGI. I need to use a lot more CGI than I anticipated. Roughly like a third of the movie was going to be CGI. Like, yeah, I think he wanted to, you know, knowing who he is and knowing where he came from, I can see him wanting to do it practically. But I guess just when they started going, they just needed to sort of, like, call an audible. I do wish that chase scene through the jungle was a little bit more toned down. Because, I mean, like, the car chase is really cool. Like, that's all stuff that's practical, you know what I mean? Aside from the over-the-topness, we have Shia basically doing, like, a Jean-Claude Van Damme split between two cars while sword fighting, and then swinging on vines through the woods like a monkey. Like, aside from the fact that, like, the CG's not great, those are two wonderful things to see for this podcast.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of fun to get those moments on their own. It just, I don't like how they just keep doubling down on everything in this one. You know, like, I think that jungle chase would be enough without the monkey swinging and everything, or even without the sword fighting. And I don't mind that they go over a waterfall. I mind that they go over three waterfalls. You know, it just feels like right when they've found the right balance, they push it a little over the edge. And that kind of goes with every scene, like the warehouse in the opening. Like, I don't have any issue with them doing, like, this awesome thing through the warehouse, but it's kind of going too far when they show the Ark of the Covenant. It's just, like, there for a wink and doesn't service the story for any
right
reason. There's just times like that I wish they pulled back.
Well, I feel like the biggest problem that this movie has is what we were talking about before we started recording. So, like, there's so many winks, just like you said, there's so many winks to the previous movies that are like, hey, we've been away for 25 or 30 years, or not 30 years, 20, 25 years. You guys remember us, right? Like, you loved us, like the Ark, or like I was saying before we started recording, when Jim Broadbent shows up in Indy's classroom, and just like in Raiders, like at the very beginning, like that's one of the, like, after he goes on this adventure and he comes back teaching his class, and like he sort of gets, the dean just like steps in, and it's the same beats. And it's just like, hey, like, you remember, and I feel like, and like, you know, they show Sean Connery's picture, and I feel like they just, like, a lot of things, like, it's fan service, but, like, to the point where we don't need that. Like, the movie itself is fan service, you know what I mean? Like, you could have this kind of story and not have it be Indiana Jones and still have it be, like, a fun movie. The fact that, like, it is Indiana Jones is almost enough of a fan service that, like, you don't need to be like, hey, remember all those times? Like, it's basically like, you know, if you, like, saw a picture of, like, Short Round, it was like, oh, I missed that kid. Like, that's, like, the only thing that, like, this is missing.
Yeah, instead of creating these new things to love, it's reminding you of the old things that the movies first created that we all loved about those. And it kind of fails to create anything new in and of itself for me, except for one element that I think you might be surprised, listeners, which was my favorite part of this movie, which is Shia, his son Mutt. I think Mutt is actually a great addition to the Indiana Jones canon. I'm not entirely pleased with the way that he's incorporated into the film, and I just think there's way too many characters, like the Mac character. What is he even doing in this movie? You know, Indy's partner, his friend, or his...
Right.
Double-crossed friend.
You mean his triple agent? No, I just lied about being a double agent.
Yeah, I mean, even Oxley, the John Hurt character, like, I don't even know if he was necessary. I think you could have just been Indy, Mutt, and Marion. You know, Marion could have been the one that's lost, captured by the Russians. She found the skull. Like, just make her the explorer.
Or just have Ox be dead. Like, you don't need Ox to be there.
Exactly. So I think it gets bogged down, which is unfortunate, because if it was streamlined, there really is something underneath all of the remember this-ness about it, and just all of the references and stuff. Like, it's Indiana Jones. It doesn't need to reference itself. What it should do is just trust within the strength of the character to be able to tell a story that creates these new iconic moments.
Going back to how you started that, I feel like Mutt is good, but I feel like there's a problem here. Like, was this like supposed to be like a passing of the baton to Shia?
I don't really have any inside info on any of that. To my knowledge, when it came out, the rumor was, oh, he's going to be in it. Then the media was like, well, then obviously they're going to pass the baton or pass the fedora to Shia. But I don't think that was ever actually the intention. If you go into interviews now about how they're trying to make a new Indiana Jones and ask the producers, you're going to recast them, they're like, no, Harrison Ford will always play Indiana Jones, or at least Indiana Jones will always be the
Harrison
character
Ford, yeah.
Yeah, or just that Mutt, if he gets a movie, he won't be called Henry, he'll be, you know, it'll be The Adventures of Mutt Williams, it won't be Indiana Jones.
Gotcha.
Or, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so I think like the idea was maybe in a way to create like spin-off attempts to then take the Indiana Jones universe and, you know, go full Marvel with it or something.
What's interesting about that is that in terms of Harrison Ford as Indy, reading the trivia on IMDb, a lot of it apparently, like, he kept himself in such good shape between the movies, and, like, he's, I mean, what is he now, like, 73 now, so he's probably, like, 65 then? Does that sound right?
I think so.
He's in great shape there, and he did most of his stunts, like, you know, in the beginning, in the opening scene where he's just, like, scaling those boxes, and, like, you know, it's just climbing a little bit, but, like, those are kind of steep, and, like, he's just going up there effortlessly.
I was thinking even just being stuffed in a trunk at his age would be a stunt.
He did almost all of his stunts for this. He apparently wanted them to include more jokes about his age. He didn't dye his hair. Like, so he wants to embrace the fact that, like, Indy's older. Like, this whole thing was not about, I feel like, you know, based on what you said and based on the interviews and based on, like, this thing I'm reading right now, it's not about the passing of the torch, but, like, seeing Indy in a different decade.
Yeah.
Here's the guy that you saw in the 30s. Now it's the 50s. Now we have, you know, nuclear bombs, and we have these, like, Pleasantvilles or whatever. It's a different world around him. I like Ike. Is it the 40s or the 50s? Whatever it is.
Late 50s, yeah.
So it's him in a different time. It's cool to see. If you have, like, a reboot, like, with Channing Tatum as Indiana Jones, it'd be like, okay, like, cool, I guess. But, like, seeing him, like, an 80-year-old Indiana Jones, like, one last mission. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just sort of, like, one last job. I don't know. The one sort of reason now, like, watching this is weird is that, like, I feel like living in a world where the Uncharted games exist for PS3 and PS4, like, it almost defeats the need to watch an Indiana Jones movie, because those are, like, those are Indiana Jones movies, you know what I mean? Like, it's more interactive, and it's, like, it's crazier, and it's, like, more fun, sort of.
Yeah, well, I even was thinking of National Treasure watching this at some points, because you just can't help but, this movie is the template for so much, you know, Tomb Raider games, and, you know, other just adventure stuff, and who even knows if, like, Pitfall wasn't based a little bit on this. It's just a guy with a whip going over holes on Atari. I wouldn't mind if they recast Indy. I think Harrison Ford does a good job. I just think the character in this, for the most part, is disgruntled a lot.
Yeah.
That just, it's just, like, the way they wrote him. I think Harrison's fine. He can still embody. I mean, you know that he's fit, and he did a good job in Star Wars and everything, too. But I don't think recasting him would be out of line. I mean, on the TV show, it is canon, but I know people don't really go back and watch that. He was played as a young boy at the age of 10 by one actor, and then he was played in his 20s by another actor and stuff, and it's still Indy to me, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter ultimately who plays him. It would have been maybe a little weird if, like, they recast him and still set it like in the 50s in a way. I don't know. It's strange. Like, I almost want to say if they're going to recast Indy, you got to go back and do younger adventures so that you could do more in between stuff. It's a weird situation.
Yeah, I don't know what you do with the I don't know, because it's not like Bond, right? Where it's
right, because it's chronological. Like, it keeps this. Yeah. It keeps like a continuity.
I'm trying to think, like, if they continued it with Mutt, which I don't think they're going to. But like, if they continued it with Mutt, they'd still have to call the movie Indiana Jones, right? Because like, otherwise, like, you wouldn't just call it, like, The Adventures of Mutt Williams, because like,
maybe
the part of the branding is like people want to see the new Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah, I mean, remember the original was released as Raiders of the Lost Ark. It was retitled Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark for home video. They could bring back that tradition where it's just like Mutt Williams, you know, and the Pyramid of Mystery or something, or, you know, the Lost Continent with the Mermaid or whatever, and just do it that way and market it as having maybe a cameo by Indy in it, and just so you could connect it absolutely to that world or something. Watching it this time, I totally understand that the whole part is just to see how Indy is reflecting the different decade that he's sort of running around in. I hate to keep harking back to that show, but they really nail it in that show. Like, it really gets a sense of, you know, he's just like this cipher of history, and you see the world through his eyes of adventure. And the more I see it and think about it, the less I definitely have a problem with this movie and enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, this movie's not bad.
But I tell you, it is kind of, the CGI is bad though. Like, the prairie dogs in the beginning.
A lot of CGI, like in sort of in every decade. You know, you can point to examples where it does not age well.
What kind of kills it for me is that we're dealing with George Lucas and Steven Spielberg here, and they basically have the keys to ILM, and it's like, you know, they should have done whatever it took to advance the technology to the point where, you know, even now we're going, I can't believe how good those monkeys looked. Or, you know, that alien at the end was like the greatest alien we've ever seen. But in fact, it's kind of one of the worst. And that's just one of the little bummers that makes me go, like, everything is here to make it great, and they only made it good.
But I'm okay with it.
No, I'm still okay with it. I'm just searching for things to say about it.
In terms of Mutt Williams, Shia LaBeouf, Mutt, common name for a dog, or named after a dog or whatever. Indiana Jones, named after the family dog, right? Henry and Indiana, so a little bit of a connection there. I think Shia's good in this movie, and Shia has a certain energy. Like, you need that, like, that youthful energy next to Indy. Like, basically the vibe that Harrison Ford had at 40, he doesn't have anymore. You need somebody young. But I feel like the same thing we were talking about when you're up against robots in Transformers, or you're up against Tom Hardy in Lawless, nobody's going to look great or cool next to one of the all-time epitomes of cool. You know what I mean? Like, he's so overshadowed by the giant that is Indiana Jones. Like, forgetting Harrison Ford for a second, just like Indiana Jones, I don't think he's given as much as he possibly could to do, because A, he's not the star, and B, like, people are there to see Indy. You know what I mean? I feel like he's good, but this is not a great example of like how he could lead an action franchise. It's not his job to lead, it's his job to sort of play second fiddle, sort of.
Yeah, it is a bit of a thankless role in that regard, and I don't think that he was wanted in the public eye to be in this movie after Transformers and things, and his public image was starting to sway a little bit, and I think this role is like a reason like a lot of people avoid some of his stuff to a degree, just because he feels like, I don't know, it almost feels like he, not that he doesn't want to be here, but that he, it's like a duty or something, or like a favor, or like Spielberg said, you're going to be in Indiana Jones, and he's just like, well, you can't say no to that, so like, I'll do it, because it almost feels like he doesn't yet have what it takes to sort of share the screen with Harrison Ford for that long. You know, like, there's moments and there's shots and there's certain sequences where I think they're good together, but there's not enough between them, there's not enough chemistry for this entire buddy film of them country hopping and all that, and you almost needed to find someone new and make him like a breakout star because of this role.
I really don't know that that's his fault. I think it's the character. I think that, like, They have to devote so much to Indy.
Well, not just Indy, the supporting characters as well. And, you know, you got Mac and Ox and Karen Allen in there. And yeah, I say it again, like, this needed to be streamlined. Like, we needed Indy to meet Mutt way earlier, and we needed them to be basically the only two together for most of the movie. And I think it just gets bogged down with, a lot of sidetracking and dead ends and riddles that go nowhere and confusion about how many aliens there are and what alien is which from where and what dimension. And it just, you know, it gets too confusing. It kind of folds in on itself at certain times and becomes this mess, but eventually untangles enough to still be quite enjoyable at the end.
Because Shia doesn't show up for half an hour, and I think maybe the best scene in terms of, like, chemistry and energy and, like, what we want to see, at least within the scope of this podcast, is that first scene at what's basically the Back to the Future restaurant.
Yeah.
Because it's just the two of them, like, kind of feeling each other out. The coolest moment in the movie is Shia, for some reason, taking his comb and dipping it in that guy's Coke, and then just, like, rubbing it through his hair. Like, I don't know why he does it, but, like, he does it. It's wonderful. Like, there's something about that scene. He drives next to him on the train, and Indy sort of has, I guess, a wise ass, like, you're running out of road, kid. He gets off the train and they just go there. Like, they don't know each other. Neither of them know the relation to the other. Father, son, spoiler alert. There's, like, an energy and there's, like, this chemistry there as they're sort of getting to know each other. And, like, that's not really in the rest of the movie. The next scene is they go to Indy's house or apartment or whatever. He's sort of becoming Indy, like, in that way that, like, while he's researching things, nothing else around him matters. You know what I mean? Like, he sort of gets that look in his eye where he's just like, oh, I'm all about the treasure now. I'm all about figuring out the mysteries. Mm-hmm. And, like, Shia only exists there the same way that Marion exists in the Raiders or whatever, to, like, have ideas to bounce off of. Like, it's like he would just as easily be talking to himself as he would be just talking to somebody else. And so, like, we never, like, click again. But I wish, like you said, that from the beginning or, like, at least 15 minutes earlier, that they get together and they just sort of, they hit it off in a bigger way.
Yeah, because that school stuff is awesome, actually. Like, I really like when the fight breaks out and the motorcycle chase on campus. That's all really cool and well done. And you get to see old Indy, you know, on the back of the motorcycle. By the end of that sequence, Mutt is like, you're not just some old man. You're actually got, like, energy to you and stuff. And yeah, I also feel like Mutt is coming into this movie fully formed, almost like he stepped out of another movie into this movie. Like, he's already had a couple of adventures under his belt or something. So I don't know. I just like the whole whatever they're going for with him. The problem sort of begins when they go out of the country onto their adventure, and Mutt almost seems more like Willy than Short Round. Like, he's just there as, like, this tag-along who kind of slows Indy down because he's never really been this far out in the field before and doesn't really know what to expect, what's coming around the corner or anything.
I think there's an excitement, right? Like, there's just an overall excitement, like, them getting to know each other, and it's sort of like an excitement that Shia just has, like, I'm in the Indiana Jones movie. You know, recently, we talked about a couple episodes ago about how Shia, the only movie that he likes that he made with Spielberg is the first Transformers movie. What I read was that he was so excited to be in an Indiana Jones movie that when he was offered the part or whatever, he didn't even read the script. He just said yes. He's just like, I get to be in an Indiana Jones movie. Meanwhile, John Hurt and Ray Winstone were like, we'll probably do it, but we want to read the script. And this was one of those where, like, a dude in a suit flew to their place, watched them read the script, took the script from them, and flew back. It's sort of a difference. Like, he's like this young kid who at this point is 21, 22 in real life, I think, probably grew up on these movies. He's just like, I get to be in one? Like, absolutely. When you have these older guys, you know, more established people, and we'll see, or we just saw John Hurt again in New York, I Love You, right? So that's sort of another Shia connection. But these guys who have sort of been around longer with smaller parts and just sort of like the hoops they have to jump through. But, like, I think there's, like, an excitement to Shia doing this movie. I know it's the character sort of becoming excited about, like, seeing what Indy can do and being impressed. Like, oh, like, I thought you were a teacher. And Indy just goes, like, part-time. You know, I think there's an excitement that, oh, shit, like, I'm actually in a jungle or, like, on a soundstage somewhere. I'm with Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
There's just something, like, palpable there. And I think it's great.
Yeah, I definitely feel the energy behind his performance. I mean, like I said, I think Mutt is actually my favorite part of the movie, and, you know, that's due to Shia. Like, I think he's bringing it. He's not the greatest, but for me, he's my favorite part of the movie.
Right.
One thing I do think about their chemistry and the performance between Indy and Mutt, once he finds out Indy's his dad, I feel like they really work well together. Like, all the pressure seems to be off for whatever reason, you know, I guess just story-wise. Like, there's less tension between the two of them. That's another thing. I wish Mutt came to Indy and was like, my mom's missing. Who's your mom? Marion Ravenwood. Wait a minute. Marion Ravenwood?
That bothers me. He's just like, Marion. The kid's like, and Indy's like, there's been a lot of Marys.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because he mishears Shia
He says a different last name. He says Williams because she got remarried. Like, he's Mutt Williams. She married a friend of Indy's or something to raise him and everything.
But still.
It's still crappy. Like, I just wish he said Marion Ravenwood, and then throughout the adventure, like, Indy could put it together and kind of keep it to himself and not be ready to be a dad. And then when they're rescuing Marion, the truth could come out. It just seems like they missed an opportunity in this part where they're alone to kind of play off of the last movie where he was running around with his father. They didn't get along very well. And I just feel like if they knew they were related but couldn't come to terms with that, we might get some more interesting drama going on there. In this, when they do find out that they're related, it's kind of ultimately accepted immediately, but I kind of don't have a problem with that because everything just seems to relax after that secret is revealed. No more wondering when that's going to come out of the bag or anything, and the movie can kind of drop it and move on.
It feels like something that both, like, the characters kind of know and the audience pretty much figures. You know what I mean? Like, so it's just like, if it became like a big deal, it would feel so contrived.
Yeah, like, I would even accept it if Mutt was like, you're my dad, and Indy could be like, you know how many kids have come to me and told me that? Or, you know how many illegitimate kids I might have out there? Well, but seriously, just be like, you know, there's no proof. And then it's like, okay, well, if we find my mother, she could settle this. And the chance was there to just, like, there's no need to keep that a secret. You should have just dropped that, like, as soon as possible. We might be related. Let's just put it on the table. It'll make the adventure more interesting just by design, having that in the wonder of their heads, you know, in the back of their mind. Is this true? Is this false? And then while they're hanging off of a pyramid somewhere in the Aztec pyramids or fighting some kind of, like, zombie person, they're not thinking straight. They have, like, each other to look out for. I mean, you could just play with all of that a lot more.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think Shia's good in this movie, but, like, he's not given as much to do as he could have or should have been. Like, I feel like there's just so much, like we were saying earlier, that they just, like, spend so much time on, like, the not quicksand, and, like, there's a snake there. Like, there's no reason for it to be a snake other than to be like, hey, remember how he hates snakes?
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, almost like they had a checklist of things to touch on from previous movies, and instead of working to have, like, interpersonal relationships or whatever, it's like, let's just make sure we cross off as many things as possible. Like, it's not a bad script. Like, I don't think it's lazy either. It's just they spent time focusing on the wrong things.
Yeah, I just think it's too reliant on what came before. Kind of like people talk about how the new Star Wars Episode 7 is just sort of like a soft reboot. Like, this kind of feels the same way, where it just wants to go over the greatest hits to a degree. And, you know, and also Spectre is kind of guilty of that in a couple ways, the new James Bond, where it's just like this greatest hits of kind of like the coolest Bond moments throughout history. We get, instead of his dad's diary, some Ox sends him a letter. There's a sequence where they're in some room and they sweep the floor to reveal something, and Indy, like, stands up higher to look down, just like at the when he was in Italy at the library, and X marks the spot. You're right, like, it gets to the point where they almost feel like they're rushing through that list at, like, an incredible speed, and it's not necessary because they have all the elements to create these new iconic moments, and they don't go for it. It's kind of sad when a scorpion bites Mutt and he's like, I got bit by a scorpion, and you're like, oh man, now, okay, so Indy's afraid of snakes, his dad's afraid of rats, and Mutt's afraid of scorpions. It's, like, unnecessary to this point. It feels like they're just shoving it down your throat sometimes.
As sort of negative as this is becoming, like, I just don't get it. Like, I was talking to friends while I was watching it, and I'm just like, why do people hate this? And, like, it's a bad movie. I'm like, but it's not, though. These are not the criticisms, I don't think. I don't know. Like, why don't people like this movie?
It's a matter of taste. It's a matter of expectations. I don't love it, but I definitely don't hate it. And I used to hate it. You know, I am kind of a reformed viewer of this movie. I am the one, and I couldn't even really tell you what I hated all about it, aside from what we're getting at here. It's just that it doesn't bother me anymore. I mean, we're nitpicking it now, but I don't feel like we're tearing it apart now. Necessarily. I feel like every time it trips over itself, it makes up for it in, like, the next scene. That's why I think I can accept it now, because when it kind of makes me go, man, why did it do that? A few minutes later, I can go, oh, well, it did this, and that works. So it's this weird push and pull sometimes.
I think the biggest criticism maybe is, aside from the aliens, is the fact that Indy hides in a fridge and survives a nuclear bomb. But, like, the movie makes a joke about it, like, I can't believe you're going getting yourself locked in the fridges or whatever. I'm okay with that because, like, the scene that precedes it, like, when he walks into this deserted test town, it's so weird and surreal and cool that, like, I'm okay with the craziness that comes next.
Yeah, and this time around watching it, the nuke the fridge sequence, as it's come to be known on the internet, didn't bother me in the slightest. Now I took it as, like, a joke. It's the comedy sequence, you know? I mean, and like you even said earlier, right, we've got the Ark of the Covenant in the first movie that shooting ghost lasers from God out of it, right? Like, the supernatural exists in this universe, so that didn't bother me this time in the slightest. And at least it was, as maybe it's not your sense of humor, and that's why people didn't find it funny, you know, the whole joke to me was the lead-lined refrigerator.
Right.
Right? And that's what saved them, not that it was a refrigerator or anything, it's just the products made back then were, like, toxic, too, and then it's just, like, this contraption that people died in saved his life, and I just don't have an issue with that anymore. I've come to terms with everything.
Because, like, at the end of the day, like, Indiana Jones is sort of like a MacGyver who's an archaeologist. Like, he just sort of finds ways to get by with whatever. He's always like, how am I going to get myself out of this one? Like, and this just happened to be, like, hiding in, like, the most protective thing possible. And, like, he gets scrubbed off, and there's a joke about, like, the guy, like, scrubbing his dick. Like, it's funny. The one other thing I want to say about Shia is that it's something you brought up, is, like, when he rolls up on his motorcycle, 10 or 11 movies in, whatever, 11 movies into this that we are, you know, he's been on a motorcycle in, like, 3 or 4 things. Like, I don't know if he likes motorcycles, but in Nymphomaniac, he was the motorcycle guy at the beginning. Oh, yeah. A couple other times he's ridden motorcycles.
He's always
the motorcycle guy. ARM, always riding motorcycles. But you said that he looks like...
Oh, yeah, he looks exactly like, or is styled after Marlon Brando from The Wild One. Definitely the same hat, pins on the jacket, the black gloves, maybe even the same bike.
When Shia signed on to do the script, in addition to rewatching the Indiana Jones movies, he also watched The Wild One and Rebel Without a Cause and Blackboard Jungle to get ready for the role, and he also added 15 pounds of muscle to sort of fill out and be more of like an action star kind of guy. So this movie was the most expensive, at least as of this year, I think, currently, according to IMDb, it's the most expensive movie that Spielberg's ever made. It cost $185 million. It's the only Indiana Jones movie to get no Oscar nominations. It cost a lot of money, but it made worldwide almost $800 million. So even if you double it for promotions, like, they still made a lot of money. So especially in today's remake and reboot culture, I would be surprised if we don't get another one. Harrison Ford's old, but I would be surprised if he doesn't come back.
Yeah, I definitely want another one. I mean, I think they're aware of the state of this franchise and that it has to come back. And, you know, even if this isn't the worst, there's a sense in the air that it needs to sort of redeem itself in a way. I don't know. I mean, this definitely isn't as bad as, say, the prequels, but there is that reputation about it, like it or not. They really got to come back strong, and I really hope they do, and I hope they do it sooner than later.
One thing I read that said, the Harrison Ford said in 2006 that if this movie's not made by 2008, you can count me out. Like, apparently, I don't know if he was tired of being strung along.
I think he might have said that to get the ball rolling faster.
Yeah, because apparently that like really sort of made Steven Spielberg look for scripts that would be viable to sort of go from there. Star Wars spoiler, now that Han Solo is dead, maybe you have a movie where Indy dies. Just kill off all his famous characters.
Oh, you can't do that. You can't. He lives to be over 100 because in those young Indiana Jones adventures, when they were first televised, there were these bookends. Indiana Jones as a 100-year-old man with an eye patch sitting in the museum with a wooden leg, or he's at the doctor's office or wherever he is, and he starts recounting his life stories. And I gotta tell you, I want to learn how he loses that eye. And he is still kind of aged into a crotchety old bastard too. He's like telling these young kids not to run in the museum. Now, I don't think he should die, and I think Ford wants to keep this character around. He's totally like a different vein than Han Solo. Like, Han Solo's arc was going from scoundrel to hero, right? So he kind of should have died already, I feel. Like, that's part of his arc. I think Indy needs to live on, and I think Harrison Ford needs a franchise to keep him going into his golden years.
That's fair. So I don't think I've heard anything about a fifth Indiana Jones movie.
Now, all I hear is that they want to make one.
Okay.
That's pretty much all I think is out there, is that Yeah, we're talking about it. They want to do it, and they're trying to figure it out. But if I'm not mistaken, this was sold to Disney along with the Star Wars rights. They've really got a lot on their plate over there. I just hope they don't bite off more than they can chew.
We will see. I don't think anything else to talk about this movie. Do you have anything else that you want in your notes about whatever?
I thought Cate Blanchett was good as the Russian bad girl. It was kind of cool to have like a female villain that was like strong and kind of interesting, and that whole like psychic, or trying to use the skull to create a psychic weapon, and she was gonna like, they wanted to just what, like invade people's dreams and tell them what to think. Like it was just I kind of liked how they did the whole Red Scare, because as she was saying that, I was like, oh, that's what all those Invasion of the Body Snatcher, or Invaders from Mars, or we're coming to get you in your sleep and turn you into a version of yourself no one will recognize. And that was all brought upon by like that communist Red Scare of the 50s and stuff. I actually like that the Russians in this were plotting to literally do that, like turn you into what they wanted you to be with the crystal skull. I don't think it was clear enough. I think they could have used a little more clarity with all of that, with the plan and the aliens, and definitely the ending. They just kind of cut and run at the end of this. But all in all, I was very surprised this time around how much I enjoyed it. I don't know, I think I'm cured.
I can only hope that Transformers or iRobot or maybe Disturbia, these movies that maybe not necessarily have the greatest reputation, can win us over.
And I don't think it's because we've been sitting through Transformer films either. Like,
no.
I think it stands alone.
Absolutely. And we haven't watched a Transformers movie in like a week, so there's been plenty of stuff to cleanse the palate in between. Yeah, and like you said, like, you know, Cate Blanchett's in this movie, so like, how can you hate it? Because she's kind of wonderful. Apparently she was in that black wig the entire time, and like Harrison Ford saw her walking around set without the wig on and didn't recognize her. So maybe that's just him being old man. I don't know. For all things all his movies, you can go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub. You can like us on there, find out what we've done, find past podcasts, see what's coming up next, etc., etc. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. All fun things, all Shia, all Zach, all Cage, all Keanu, all Monkey, all Now That's What I Call Music at cageclub.me. We have so many things going on there. This outro keeps getting longer and longer.
Yeah, we're going to have to record an outro and just drop it in every time instead of you. I feel bad at the end of every episode. You're listing off every show that's on our network.
I know. I don't know why I haven't done that, because especially for Cage, when I was editing them all, or like when you're doing the ones for Keanu, like I could have just like said it, but I just say it every time, and it's always like similar, but it's always different, and I feel like it gets worse each time.
I would love to hear a supercut of all the different ones.
Oh, man. If you want to cut it together, go for it. I'm good. Anyway, I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll see you next time with Transformers on all his movies.